Welcome to the next episode of Fujoshi NYC. Ray here.
May,
we just finished a really big weekend at Anime NYC.
Yeah, we didn't get to do the 10-minute daily show.
We were so tired. There was so much going on. But before we start with that, is there anything you want to share about what you've been playing, reading, watching?
I played a little bit of Let's Go Pikachu.
That's right. The game came out on Friday.
Yeah, and we didn't go to the truck to get it, even though it was so close.
The Amazon.com truck. We were at Jacob Javis at that time. Where was the truck located?
Like a few blocks away, I think.
A few blocks? Like a few avenues?
I think blocks. I don't know. I don't remember. It was pretty close.
Manhattan Avenues. But yeah. But you were patiently waiting, and you got the game yesterday.
Yeah.
So far, what have you gotten?
What have I gotten? I played for like half an hour. I got some Pidgeys and a Rattata and Pikachu.
Nice. You got the limited edition of this game that comes with the Pokeball.
No, it's not a limited edition. You can buy the Pokeball separately.
Oh, so does the game... How does the Pokeball set work? Meaning it was a game and a game with a Pokeball?
It's a controller. So you can use this to capture a Pokemon instead, like this. This isn't a video podcast or anything like that, but I'm holding it and I'm showing her.
You're motioning throwing the ball. And you'll be able to catch the Pokemon.
Yeah, because I haven't tried it yet, but apparently if you don't use this, you have to use this switch and like go like this, or unless you remove the Joy-Cons and then I think...
Oh, I see. So you have to like use both of them or just use one of them if it's disconnected.
Yeah, because it's not considered like one of the core Pokemon games, so they didn't make it like really meant for portable like all the other ones. Uh-huh. So that's why you have to do stuff to catch the Pokemon.
I see.
There's a limited edition, like, Switch that came out with it, too, but I didn't get that since I already have a Switch.
Oh, the one with the yellow Joy-Cons.
Yeah, I guess they're considered yellow, maybe.
And that has the Pikachu and Eevee on the outside.
Yeah, is it on the outside? Well, I think the dock has something. I don't remember what's in the back.
Oh, so it's the dock that has the Pikachu and Eevee.
It might be both. I don't remember.
I see. Well, let us know if you catch anything good.
It has all the Kanto Pokemon only.
Are they going to periodically upgrade it so you can catch other stuff?
I mean, they'll probably release new games.
Oh, okay.
Like all the rest of the Pokemon games.
So for this game, it's just the 151 that's from the first season.
Yeah, is this really a remake of Pokemon Yellow?
Oh. Okay. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
And I watched some Steins Gate Zero. I forget, because Okabe is still like kind of normal now. And I forgot. I only watched I didn't finish watching episode 2 yet. But I was thinking about... Oh, like him compared to the guy from Zombieland Saga, like how that guy's so crazy, and the original Okabe was really crazy too. But I remember, yeah, after you play for a while, you realize why Okabe is like that. It's because everybody around him, he's a little like Sailor Moon, that everybody, all his friends were like so alone and stuff until he came, and he makes them feel better by acting the way he is.
Oh, that's so sweet though. It's also having that kind of, like, personality. So he brings everybody together and he makes them all happy.
Yeah.
Aww. Wow, now Okabe kind of reminds me of the guy from... Seto Kaito no Yaku Domo. Oh, no. Wrong
that's
one.
That's the one I watched.
No. I mentioned the wrong title. The one that you watch is Seto Kaito no Ichizon. And that's the one I was trying to refer to.
With Mayu.
Yeah, my Fuyu.
Mayu is in Steins Gate.
Yes. Mayuri. Wrong one. But yeah, like his main purpose, the guy from Seto Kaito no Ichizon, was to make all the girls around him happy. So in a way, Okabe has his own harem.
Yeah, well, I mean... Daru is his best friend. Well, okay, Mayuri's his best friend. I guess they're all his best friends. Daru is a guy. I think Seki Tomokazu does his voice. He's the fat hacker dude or something.
And Miyano Mamoru is the one who does the he's a seiyuu for Okabe in Zombieland. Does Okabe have the same crazy voice as Zombieland does?
Yeah, I would say the Zombieland guy sounds crazier.
I heard for Zombieland, like, it's Miyano at his most Miyano-ist. I forgot, that was like another podcast was like referring to it. He's like, he's his most Miyano character. Like, it just, the director just probably like, he didn't give in any direction. He's like, just go crazy.
I mean, he's got a script.
But like, you know, they didn't tell him exactly, he told him how to express it. Because I'm not sure, like, if the side notes would be like, yes, you're supposed to laugh maniacally here, and like, you know, go off, like, act as you're going off the deep end sometimes. But Miyano just got like, it just sounds like Miyano is just so free in the when he's voicing Zombieland.
Well, the main girl is kind of like Sakura from Nozaki-kun, because like everybody else around her is crazy, and she's
the sane character.
Yeah.
The straight man in the Tsukomi Boke type of like duo, except it's her against the entire cast.
I didn't get to read any more Fujoshi Rumi because of the con and stuff.
Yeah, because of the convention, we've been so busy. On my end, I just recently caught up with more Banana Fish, which we're reaching a very even darker stage part of the story. But since we're in our last half of the season, so, and the series should be ending at the end of this season. So, there's going to be a lot more darkness to happen, like, you know, it's going to happen to between Eiji and Ash. But that's how Banana Fish is. But it's still really well done. We are reaching the next case for Phoenix Wright. There's nothing much different here, nothing interesting to note. Aside from how well animated it is. Yeah. So I'm caught up with the series that we're watching. Reading-wise, I'm looking into some new manga series. I was just telling May about earlier that Tokyo Pop released an actual BL, but they have it under their Tokyo Pop label because obviously they don't have their own BL label anymore. So it's Hanger. It's by Kisaragi Hirotaka. Kisaragi Sensei actually released Blue under the Blue label, Innocent Bird. And then later, J Manga also published some other things by her. But the one that I was thinking about getting next is called Hanger, which is a crime drama series where a regular cop is paired up with basically an ex-con, which I was kind of compared to, like, you know, Psycho Pass, because it got that kind of ideal. Neo-Tokyo future type story. So I'm interested in buying that book. And then once I do, we'll be able to talk more about it. Because I like Kisaragi's artwork. Innocent Bird was like really flowery and nice, and her in this current style is really good. I'm just kind of concerned about how frequent Tokyo Pop is going to be able to release these kind of stuff.
Is there more than two volumes?
Right now we're actually up to date. That's why I'm interested in just buying it.
Oh, but it's not like finished?
It's not finished.
Oh.
So currently out in Japan, there's only two volumes. And like the manga itself, the first volume was released in 2015. The second Tangoban was compiled together and released in 2017. So it's not so bad. So it's still ongoing. It's in the magazine Gentosha. And Tokyo Pop released both of them this year. So one was released, I think, in July, and the other one was released in September. I just noticed it because, like, I got my Right Stuff catalog for the month, and they had that under the Yaoi label, under Yaoi section, and I'm like, I had never heard of this series before, and I was just surprised that Tokyo Pop is the one that's actually putting it out. though I probably knew of it before when Tokyopop was announcing earlier this year, way earlier, that they were actually licensing manga again. So, but they haven't licensed anything else after that, so I don't know how alive Tokyopop is. But new manga is always good, so we'll see how that goes. But let's get to our continuation talking about Anime NYC. So this past weekend was Anime NYC. We went there Friday to Sunday. Overall, I can say right now is how tired I am because I'm still feeling the effects of it. But we did a lot of stuff. Mei, what do you want to start with? Because so much happened.
Okay.
Yes, the K series. The K movie series, Seven Stories. Mei and I went to several different conventions. Well, I went to several different conventions. We only went to Otakon this year. But unfortunately, we managed to not see any movie prior to this point. So we made it a point for this convention to see the two that was being released. One of them was Memories of Red, the other one was Circle Vision.
Yeah, well, at Otakon, I missed it because of Chiritz, right?
Yes, because it was held... Everything was held around that same time. Also, I believe it was on a Saturday. It was around the afternoon. Everything was going on. On my end, I went to see the Uematsu Nobuo panel. There was the Mystic Messenger special that was going on at Otakon.
Yeah, the Chiritz.
Yes, Chiritz. And unfortunately, K was being shown at that time.
Yeah, because I was kind of like, oh, well, I'll probably never get to see these Chiritz people again, but I can still watch the K movie when it comes out.
Exactly.
On, like, home video or something.
And actually, that's pretty much how it was at this convention, too, except that it was a little bit, it was less of a pressure to choose something else.
Well, what was the latter movie called? Circle Vision?
Circle Vision.
Circle Vision. That one had special guests, so that was... Like,
was like a more of a must.
More unique, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm so happy that we actually got to see the last two movies for the series.
And now we can see the first four streaming on Vudu and 2x2, which it's according to the dates on those things in those streaming sites, they were released like shortly after each movie premiered in the U.S. But like nobody has ever announced this until now. So have they just been there all this time and nobody knew?
Yeah, I was wondering, like, how many people actually went on the streaming service and noticed that? Because, as you said, like, there was no news about it. They should have said something about it. And then like, the viewership would have gone up. But now we're happy to hear that, yeah, all of them was on it.
Because I saw, like, on Tumblr, like, a few days ago, when they were like, oh, all of them are available for streaming. Well, all of them except the ones we just saw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's what I was like, did nobody know this until now then?
I wonder if, like, any of the people from Viz, like, noticed, like, oh, our viewership is really low for these movies. I wonder why. Did anyone ever announce it on social media?
I even want to... So, Tubi TV, whatever they call that. That one, I think it only had the first two, so I just ignored that one. And I looked at Vudu, because it had, like, Up to Lost Small World. And then... But it seemed like... Like, I wanted to pay for it and not have commercials, but it seems like it's only available for free with commercials.
It's almost like, I want to give you my money so I don't have to, like, sit through all these, like, advertisements or actually see these advertisements. But no, you're not going to take my money? Damn.
Don't interrupt my viewing.
Yeah, exactly. Don't interrupt my K. But yes, let's start with the movie, Memories of Red. It's actually, these last two movies are pretty cool because Memories of Red is the prequel to the TV series, while Circle Vision is the sequel to the TV series. A lot of the other movies are obviously prequels of someone, some shape or form. That's the only way that works. But the way that Memories of Red works is that Memories of Red actually sets the stage for the TV series, so it was right before the TV series starts.
I didn't realize Totsuka died on, like, Anna's birthday.
I remember it because there was, like, some sort of obviously there's some sort of, like, short stories or something like that that, like, alluded to it. even like some fan fiction, I think, was like talking about it, like, you know, information about the date of his death. But of course, like, Anna's birthday, unfortunately, yeah, it just, it got his death just over, like, overlapped everything, so it wasn't like a focus. So the fact, the mere fact that we overlooked it, maybe we heard it or not heard it, it's like, it just, it's so sad because it was Anna's birthday. She was gonna be what, 12? Yeah, she's 11. Yeah, you were talking about that. The fact that she's 11 years old, she's gonna be like, you know, she's gonna become 12 years old. It's just a sad moment. But the main part, like the majority of the movie, was how happy it was. We already like know so much about, like, you know, the other characters, and we know that Tosca was such a sweet guy. He's a cinnamon bun that had to be, like, you know, unfortunately eliminated. But then it's just like to see the movie itself concentrate on his effect on the other characters, and of course Mikoto's, like, his feelings on the entire thing.
Yeah, like when Tosca died, he wanted to call Mikoto, but he didn't, because he didn't want, like, the fallout from it or something.
Yeah, he doesn't want, he knows how emotional Mikoto was, and he doesn't want him to be sad. So he ends up calling Kusanagi.
Just to tell them he was happy.
That he was happy. Yeah. But that's skipping ahead, lah. The entire movie was, like, you know, them planning Anna's birthday party. So, like, all the things they were going to do, them planning the party with Anna right above them was not very smart.
Yeah, why don't they wait for her to leave the building?
Or actually go to sleep. I don't know. It wasn't in the morning time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anna was about to go out.
Yeah.
And yeah, then she came back and be like, yeah, now is not a good time to go out. Anna's such a sweetie. Oh, but the entire planning was hilarious, because Tosca's got some really interesting ideas about how to celebrate his birthday.
Well, if they can't surprise her with a surprise party, they should surprise her with a weird cake.
A giant cake. Taller than Anna. It's like, yes, how are you gonna, like, carry that over?
A wedding cake, which Kusanagi will not hear.
Yeah. Like, Daddy Kusanagi is not accepting this. Or mommy style. Depending on which role he's taking up right now.
Well, daddies are the ones that don't want their little girls to, like, get married.
Exactly. Oh, that's true. It's mostly the daddies.
So Totsuka is the mommy.
Totsuka, like, yes, let's have a wedding cake.
What's that? Give her Mikoto.
Yeah, exactly. What does Mikoto mean? Mikoto's the second daddy? It was Totsuka that was trying on a dress, right? Or was it another guy? One of them was looking at a dress.
I think it was Totsuka.
I was like, yeah, this dress would look really good on her. Except she's the one that, he's the one that's holding it up to himself. Yeah. I'm sure they're both the same size.
It reminds me of something in SpongeBob.
Something else?
Well, SpongeBob, which you didn't watch with me.
You can still share. What's about SpongeBob?
Oh, well, I mean, he was, Pearl and the daddy were, like, arguing, and he was holding the dress that was for Pearl, so he just, like, held it up to himself and put his head through the hanger. Like.
Does he look good with the dress?
Sure. I'm sure Ethan Slater looks great in a lot of things.
I see. But since we're talking about birthday presents, let's talk about Mikoto looking for a birthday present for Anna.
What's Munakata want that bear for?
Well, Munakata met up with Mikoto at a toy store, so I shall assume he's finding a toy. Except he just had to confront Mikoto.
I thought Munakata was maybe getting it for Awashima. Like, oh, she likes cute things. All of my subordinates should have a gift sometimes.
That would be such a Munakata thing to do. Even, like, when he's, like, not working, he's, like, thinking about his department.
He needs better clothes.
You know, you don't think the MM mammogram all over his shirt looks, like, very stylish?
And the slightly shorter pants? No.
Maybe it's, like, his version of, like, I'm gonna blend in with the civilians now. This is what I'm gonna wear. My name is Munakata, so I will wear a shirt covered in M's. That makes sense, right? Yes, yes, no? Not really? What doesn't make sense is Mikoto glaring at a teddy bear. He's like so serious. First of all,
he looks all the time.
Yes, but it was about to turn into Mikoto versus Teddy Bear. Stage one fight.
It looks a little like that Ted Bear or the bear from Yuri on Ice.
Yes,
something.
It does. Oh my gosh, now that you mentioned it, yes, the bear has some really extreme eyebrow action going on. Maybe that's why. Maybe Mikoto's thinking, like, why is this teddy bear glaring at me? I must glare back. That entire scene was hilarious. I couldn't help it.
And Mikoto is, like, he's thinking about it, like, he's in a cage, but he's happy here because he has all of them.
Yeah. We were talking about a little bit about it before. I feel like the cage itself that they were referring to is almost like the power that he has. Like, his control over the power is like putting his powers in a cage. Like, and so if he releases his power, he's going to break the cage. And, yeah. But it was like, I had the wording much better when I was thinking about it earlier. But yes, that's what I feel like that was the allegory that was made. Because Monokata even said it, like, you know, even though you're in a cage, like, it's something... Well, Totsuka was talking about it. It's like, you're happier being there. Because even though he had to, like, control his own power, he had to, like, subject himself, he gets to be with all of his friends. He has the makeshift family, which is why I love, like, this movie so much, because it shows a lot of the relationships within Homura and how much, like, you know, they really care about each other, how Mikoto brought everybody together. And especially with Totsuka, because Mikoto couldn't do it alone, and he had his, like, in help of his two, like, main clansmen.
Yeah, Mikoto, well, at some point he was kind of, when they show, like, he didn't want to do all this stuff, and Totsuka's like, oh, well, how about if you do it for me, or something.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things that I love most about the movies, because Mikoto's, like, and Totsuka's relationship gets to shine through so much. A lot of the times I felt like Kusanagi, like, steps aside for those two, which is so sad, because Mikoto's, like, paired up with, like, so many other people.
Aoshima.
Well, yes, but then there's the Aoshima Kusanagi pairing, because they're all pretty much Osana Najimi in some way. We don't even know how. I'm pretty sure there's gonna be some story that Gora is gonna share with us, like, about how Kusanagi and, like, Aoshima, like, you know, are together, not together, but, like, grew up together and stuff like that. But yeah. But Mikoto's, like, paired up with so many. And Yata's, like, admiring him all the time. I'm pretty sure, like, majority of Homura is, like, in love with him or in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. But yeah, like, it's almost like a consensus that Tosuka and Kusanagi's in love with Mikoto. And Kusanagi's just gonna be like, I will just go with whatever Mikoto does. It was almost inevitable. Of course, it's inevitable, because we knew what happened at the beginning of the TV series. But they basically... The movie breaks my heart a little bit every single time we see Totsuka go out by himself with the video camera, because we know what's going to happen next. We know the TV series. We know this is how it starts. So every time it's like a nighttime, and then they did it like at least 3 times in the course of the movie. And I'm like, we're not even at the end of the movie yet. Like, are you going to do this earlier? I'm like, we don't know the timing of the movie.
Yeah, like when he passes random Japanese kid in the street, like, I think the kid is normal. And then after he passed, the collar was open. And so that's when colorless took over, I guess.
Oh, that's a good point. I never noticed that. I have to rewatch the movie for that part. I didn't notice, like, but the... If you're saying, like, the collar was closed at one point and it was open...
Yeah, when Totsuka passed him, the kid turns around, it's open with the red bow, like, hanging there.
So you're saying, like, colorless one came at that time. That's a very good point. I did not notice that, but you're right. You're probably right at that. I can't wait to watch the movie again and actually see it. Yeah. Random Japanese kid.
I forgot his name.
Yeah. There was it was only featured in one thing.
Or something.
Yeah.
Shiro's body. One of Shiro's bodies.
One of his bodies. How many bodies does he have? Do you want to go ahead and talk about Tekken movie?
So in Shiro's, like, dream world, his perfect dream world, he's still in that kid's body.
You're jumping ahead again, May. But in short answer, you're answering your like question, yes. Circle Vision starts out kind of like this, kind of like in media ras. Basically, like, we don't know what's going on.
Well, it's because I already read, like, the panel description that says, oh, that so-and-so are dreaming and it all seems too perfect, and, or something like that. Like,
yeah.
It seems too perfect and unfulfilling. It's like, oh, so it's a dream.
It's a dream, yeah. So basically the description already spoiled it. So it basically, like, you know, says, because the way that they set it up is you're not supposed to know what's going on. You're not supposed to know, like, for some reason, guessing that it's a dream is the most natural description.
Like, well, the second time that they repeat a scene, you probably...
Yeah, pretty much. But then it was like, because in the very first opening scene, we have Shiro, Neko, back in school.
And for some reason, Claudia and...
Yes. The young version of Claudia and...
Well, there was never an old version because she died.
Yeah, that's true. It's the version that we already know because she died young. And the Gold King is there. Yeah, so, like, everyone else is around. They're already, like, and they're, for some reason, Kuro's, like, cooking for them. And then both Neko and Shiro goes to school. So this is such a, you know, idealistic setting. And obviously, like, it's a dream setting. So guessing that it's, knowing that it's a dream is a small spoiler to it. Because, like, viewers would just naturally assume.
Yeah, because I'm not confused if it's a dream. It's like, oh.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, but then it starts getting funny because, like, we don't, it's more than a dream. That's basically, it's more than a dream. Because, then we have Jungle appearing. We have repeats of scenes from previous seasons, both from season 1 and season 2. And, like, you know, and as you mentioned before, like, stuff repeats like that. And then we're just like, is it repeating the same day? Are they redoing it? Are they doing this every single day? That was, like, the question.
Well, why doesn't the dream continue? Why do they just dream the same day over and over?
Yeah, that's pretty weird. Because that's like, you know, we don't know how many times they thought about it. They had the same thing until they noticed, like, hey, we're doing something different. Because at the beginning, when they did it the second time, I thought this was like, you know, slice of life. Every single day, status quo. That's what's going to happen. It felt like that. But then, like, then they pointed out, like, no, it's actually a repeat. I'm like, that's weird. But then we learn more about what's going on. And that... This is just not a product of one dream. It's actually a product of many dreams. And it's actually not just a dream. It's like, it's what they want everything to actually be. And as you mentioned at the very beginning, Shiro dreams that he was back in a chibi's body. It's like, Weissman doesn't want to be big and tall in an awesome outfit. He wants to be in a schoolboy outfit and go to school with Shineko every day.
And have Kuro. Shorter than Kuro.
And be shorter than Kuro and have Kuro cook for him. But even though, like, you know, even when he's Weissman,
Kuro still cooks for him.
Yeah, Kuro still cooks for him. It's not that, that's not going to change.
Or not.
Yeah, exactly. So this is Shiro's dream. We don't know why.
And also Kuro and Mishakuji get along well.
Yeah, I feel like we missed something.
Naturally.
Yeah, like I think we missed something like in between the end of the TV series and this one. Because
Kuro defeated him and Mishakuji.
And Mishakuji's like, sure, okay, now we're besties again. Because that's how they acted in the movie. They acted like so naturally, like, oh,
they went to see their master.
Yeah, they went to see their master. Their master is still alive in their dreams. And then we come to the saddest moment. Munakata actually doesn't have much of a change. Do you remember, like, I don't think there was anything changed about his life. Besides, like, the only focus...
That part's Awashima's dream, and she just wants everything in a perfect order or something.
I guess so. Oh, no. I remember now. Munakata's, Awashima's dream is the fact that he still has his Damocles, and there's his sword, Damocles' sword, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Every time she looks up, she sees the sword.
They all have their powers.
And they all have their powers.
Because it's what she knows. It's what she's comfortable with.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm surprised she didn't just bulk out and, like, get a chunk of, like, Anko.
Well, there was still some in her drink, I think, when she went to see Kusanagi.
in Fushimi.
I feel Misaki. Like he was kind of like whatever about the
whole thing. Fushimi was, but he knew, he kind of suspected it was a dream because Misaki asked him. And then Misaki's dream was that he got along with Fushimi.
I mean, they get along now anyway.
Yeah, but I guess that's like, that's what he wants. He wants the most. That part I thought was like, oh, that was really, really sweet.
The part he wants the most, maybe Mikoto and Totsuka are still alive.
Yeah, that is very true. But it wasn't like, so I guess like Mikoto and Totsuka being alive.
Yeah, I guess they worked together to stop the green, like they weren't the ones fighting each other like at the beginning of season 2. Like it's a recreation of the beginning of season 2, but replaced by Jungle. And
replaced by Jungle. So Misaki didn't want to.
Red and Blue will work together.
Exactly. So that was like, that's like, do you see like how, it's like, oh. It's like everything that you want, like, you know, fan fiction to be, like they created it that way. Gora really is good at creating fanfiction. Oh my god, because he knew what the fans want. He knows like what the characters, like, you know, what we want the characters to want.
I feel like they all realized the thing about the dream, except Kusanagi. Maybe he did realize, but he was the one who wanted it over the least.
Yeah, because he was the one that was most emotional. Like, all the others were ready for the dream to, like, okay, we're ready for the dream to end.
Maybe Sukuna, too, but he's a kid.
Well, Sukuna took some time, but he was the youngest.
Yeah. Maybe because he had more adults helping him. Because, like, what's her name? The ninja.
Dohan.
Dohan and Mishakuji and, Nagare and Iwafune. It's like they all want to help Sukuna.
Yeah. They wanted to keep the dream going for Sukuna's sake. Because Sukuna...
Well, they wanted to end for his sake.
For his sake too, yeah. That's why I felt like Kusanagi was the most hurt. Like, not hurt by the dream, but he was the most affected by it. He felt so sad and he didn't... So that's why, like, they waited at the end for Kusanagi to have that moment with Mikoto and Totsuka. Which I thought was, like, so sad. And it's really, really incredibly sweet because, like, Anna said something, like, very profound. Like, you know, because she's actually the one that met Mikoto and Totsuka in her dream. Which happened in Missing Kings already, in the movie. So she already went through that moment. And then she said something, I can't quote it very well, but she said something like, now it's your turn, or something like that. It's like, now you can have your moment with Mikoto and Totsuka. Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Kusanagi was crying too.
Kusanagi was crying. That's why I felt like, yeah, like Sukuna had his own, like, you know, have to go through his own moments, but Kusanagi is the one that has to say goodbye to his childhood friends. And he's been with them for years. So even longer. So. And we don't even get to really see his crying face. We just see him head down at the bar. Like, he didn't want to wake up. He didn't want to leave that. So.
It's Yata's dream, and even Ryata was like, you know, all the pain that we went through, it's what makes them themselves.
Exactly. And, but not to mention, Yata still has Fushimi.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he had his dream came true. He still has Fushimi. They can still be together. So it's like,
it's so sweet.
Yeah, I know. And Circle Vision is the sequel for the series. So, but there's more. Oh, we didn't talk about Idol K. Every single part of the movies get to have like a little excerpt at the beginning about Idol K. Some of it's done in chibi style. Sometimes we have some animation done in real style, which is always like very funny.
But even though we didn't get to see Lost Small World, at least we get to see the part of Idol K where they get Yata and Fushimi to participate.
Yeah, because in Memories of Red, like Idol Fushimi and Yata got to like do a tokusatsu, like, you know, show together. They get to talk to each other. And Shiro brings them like onigiri.
I thought like when Shiro and Kuro were talking about it in the beginning, I thought it was gonna be like that interview, that audio drama interview where they're like, oh well, you know, Awashima and Kusanagi told them to get along and do the interview.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Shiro was like, their agency's already agreed, so this is just a formality. It's like, is it really?
Well, there's more about that, yeah. Because they only listen to Kusanagi and Awashima.
But there weren't any protests from them, so I guess everybody gets along and I'm okay.
Yay! We get to see Nagare be all shiny.
That dancing looked weird.
Yeah, it's all that CG dancing. I wish they'd cut actual really good, their top animators for that scene. Because as I said, dancing is almost like fighting, and their fight scenes are beautiful. Yeah, but there's like always a lot of different limits for their dancing scenes. Do you want to continue talking about anime we see, or should we move on to Dakaichi?
Probably move on.
All right. We'll share more about Anime NYC in our next episode as well, because there is a lot to talk about for it. But for Dakaichi, actually, Circle Vision is a good transition into Dakaichi, because Dakaichi actually does something similar, which is it takes us place into the past. Because, yeah, when we first started...
I did wonder why in the preview it was such a weird color. I was like, why is it so dull looking?
Yeah. No, I thought at first it might be like them shooting something, and that was like what it would look like. But actually, I really like the way that this episode is shot because it was, first of all, it's in Azumaya's point of view, and then second of all, like, it started out as if like we're watching something completely different. It's the only thing I can compare it to is like we're watching something for Evil or something like that, because they had like so many scenes of the backgrounds and everything, and then it a lot of overlapping like scenery, like and Azumaya just like a voiceover, so it's almost like we're watching like a drama or something like that, like something totally different. But then we got to hear about how Azumaya and Saijo first met and his first job, her first debut, basically. Yeah. So it isn't just like one of the ones like where, oh, I know of you and I love you or some of that. It's like he actually has a reason for falling in love with Saijo, and like all of his and how he's like became obsessed with Saijo. It was not like, oh,
this monster didn't exist before he met Saijo.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then he's like, it's like how he slowly he didn't just like, you know, trip over Saijo and fell in love with him. He actually like, you know, got to know Saijo, saw his like contrariness, how he interacted with others, and like, you know, naturally just fell in love with his passion, which I thought was so beautiful. It's like,
yeah, it's like cute. He laughed when he was listening to him on the phone when he was like, I'm gonna get a cake and show that director up or something like that.
Yeah,
he'll be so embarrassed when they wear pink again.
Exactly. Well, that producer was like pretty shady.
Yeah, like hitting on all the women or something.
Yeah, just hitting on a girl. It's so, and they are, everyone knew, because it's like they all mentioned it, sexual harassment. Like, you know, how can you have sexual harassment here? Yeah, and I'm happy that both Azumaya and Saijo wanted to protect their co-star, wanted to like step in and like, you know, because it's injustice.
Yeah, well, Azumaya was willing to do it even though he's a new actor and he like it would have damaged him.
Well, that's true, because he is the producer, and producers are the ones behind, like, you know, it's not just one series, it's like many series.
And then Saijo stepped in.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because for Azumaya's first role, he was in a drama. It was in a serious drama, not a comedic drama. I think that's a pretty good start for a new star.
Oh. I like how, like, at the end, would they go back to, like, the scene from the first episode or something. So I just still sitting there with the magazine script.
Yeah. I want to go, like, I need to go rewatch the first episode again and see how their interactions pick up. But, yeah, like, after that point, like... Well, 3 years is a long time, so I guess they didn't have any other, like, you know, shows together since that time. Or maybe it's not big enough shows. Because, as they said, like, this was his first lead in a show with Saijo. Yeah. Because afterwards, like, you know, he got other leads as well, so.
And Saijo makes, like, faces that makes Azumaya want him.
Oh, he makes some sexy-ass faces. You're talking about his expressions?
Yeah, like when he had him up against the wall.
When he Kabedoned him, basically. Because that was him.
Protecting him from the water.
From the water. Yeah, every time that happens, like, it's almost like a take me face, because it's like, it's a I'm so weak, you can take me now kind of thing.
So what he said in the last episode, the way you're making that face, anybody would want you.
Pretty much. I think that's the face that he was talking about, like, you know, because, but it wasn't that face that triggered him. It's the face that, like, pushed him over the edge, basically, because he was already falling in love with him even before.
That's why he had him up against the wall.
It's like, I must protect this dude. Because he was already falling in love with his passion, because
he made that face because he looked like a ravenous monster or something.
Yes, perhaps. Oh my gosh! Because like Azumaya's, like, you know, monster style has gone through. Yeah, and it's like actually because of I feel like it's because of Saijo that Azumaya's angel personality came out, because we don't see the angel ways at all throughout the entire episode, and it was only in the latter end I think we saw feathers.
Yeah, he used to ride a motorcycle too, but then he got a car. He's like, oh, I wanna.
Yeah, I want to be able to drive the one that I could want to protect in. I was like, that is so sweet. So Azumaya, like, it's not that he changed for Saijo, but he his wanting to protect
a
came
bit
out.
Like Ayagi, we get his name right this time.
Yeah, Ayagi, thank you.
Ayagi saying, I could change my womanizing ways for
Saijo.
Yeah,
Saijo has that effect on people, right? Turning guys gay. It's a gay of demonic charm kind of thing. So if he doesn't even know about it. Yeah. But yeah, when Saijo got sick, like, we got to see him, like, at the hospital. We got that scene. So it wasn't a scene after all. It was actually him at the hospital. He was actually sick.
Yeah, but I would like to see one of those scenes from, like, after.
After.
I love that kind of stuff. But usually I like the Uke to be the one hospitalized or hurt or whatever.
Oh, well, there's others too. Yeah, other type with that kind of setting. But Saijo was ill, and Azumaya got to. Oh yeah, and Azumaya started eating mints even back then. So he eats mints when he is frustrated.
Are these real mints? Let's look them up. Oh, they don't have real stuff in this, like Sammy and whatever.
Yeah, or Tony.
Oh,
that's from the Nozaki-kun. Yeah. Wrong series.
Have a Honda.
Honda, latest episode. It's so much fun. We got to hear about the wholesaler side and the publishing side of the series. And we get to see where Honda-san gets all of his information from.
Oh, yeah. When S-san invited him out and the rest of his, like, co-workers were like, oh, he's only going for research. I was thinking, this was like some kind of bookstore social research or something. I was like, oh, it's research for his series.
Yeah, actually, that was when we realized, like, oh, he's actually writing it as, like, while he's still working. Because I didn't catch that until later on when they were actually mentioning, like, oh, like, how about that bookseller Honda-san series? The Skullface one. And I'm like thinking, like, oh yeah, the characters are not actually Skullface, so they don't even know, like, who the Skullface one is. But then he's like, then they start like critiquing the book. It's like, that's not about reality. They're exaggerating.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you would think people would back down about it. Like when you tell them, oh, you're the one who does that. And Honda's like, he's doubling down.
Yes.
He's more determined now.
Exactly. And I like the comment that they give him. It's like, you know, comments about the story is like, you have to, like, be more mean to the wholesalers because they're really bad.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for the wholesalers for the books. There's so much thing. Like, I didn't realize there's so much stuff that's involved with selling books. I thought it was just simply you order books, you get the books, and you get the books to the customers. That's it. Apparently, there is a lot more that's involved in all of that. Yeah. Oh, and we found out that wholesaler-san is a fudanshi.
Yeah. When they say, like, the manager? Is that what she is?
Yes, you mean, like, armor head.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
When they said she only acts normal around him, I thought that meant she had a crush on him, but I guess, like, she just feels the most normal around him.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't notice that. because she's like a Fujoshi, so yes. Well, us as being Fujoshi, we feel more down we're all around other Fujoshi and Fudanshis too. I wonder what does that mean, like, I wonder what kind of movie they went to see then. Because they even bought Honda-san to see the movie with them.
Yeah, so it could have been a BL movie because I don't think Honda would have went.
Yeah, but then, like, he was okay. Like, they were, I guess there's enough, like, BL elements in the movie that they had a conversation.
Like, Token Rambu.
Yeah, something like that. Speaking of which, Token Rambu is coming out with a movie.
Yay!
Can't wait to see it. It's awesome.
Oh, those people!
Live action movie.
I love those people.
Yeah, it's great. The commercial for it looks awesome. So not just only we have musicals, we have the live action movie. And as for Nozaki-kun, oh my gosh, we get to see the next, we get to see Nozaki-kun interact more with the Wakamatsu. Throughout the entire first part of Nozaki-kun,
we didn't meet Wakamatsu until today.
That was the first time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And as soon as we met Wakamatsu, my first thought was, is this new Nozaki-kun's new boyfriend?
I like how his female characters are based on guys.
And all his male characters are based on girls. There's a lot of strong females in Nozaki-kun. I think that could be the reason why. And all the guys are so docile or crying or trying to sparkle so much. So I guess that's why. It's a good change of, like, you know, personality traits. But Wakamatsu, as soon as Nozaki, like, sticks his head through the door, Wakamatsu's, like, shines. He's, like, all sparkling and be like, oh, Nozaki-senpai. And then he gets all sweet and he's, like admiring him from afar. Yeah. I love that part, though. Because throughout the entire time. And then Wakamatsu just gets everything wrong. Because he's trying to tell Seo not, like, you know, that she's being too forceful at the basketball club, that she shouldn't do all of these things, and then he's asking for advice, and Nozaki is trying to actually give advice, but for some reason Wakamatsu is
looking at shoujo manga that looks like it's from, like, the 70s or something for advice.
I don't know. Maybe that's all the manga that Nozaki has, because he is drawing shoujo manga. So as for reference, he's gonna keep all the shoujo manga from the 70s.
Well, it's like Seiya's oblivious because she thinks she's a nice person or something, but she's, like, ruining everybody's lives. But, like, Wakamatsu seems pretty oblivious too, because when he was talking to her, he was like, why do you always only throw the ball at me, and why do you make me carry your stuff, and why do you take me to a restaurant and buy me dinner?
Nozaki's immediately like, she likes you. But not only is he oblivious to all of that stuff, everything that he says to her are oblivious as well. He takes all the tropes from shoujo manga and gets it wrong.
I would write her a challenge letter on flowery paper.
With a heart in the back of the envelope. And says, I need to tell you something that I've always been wanting to tell you.
And then he gives her gloves.
Instead of smacking her with them.
With one glove.
That's true. He's only supposed to smack her with one glove. He gives her a pair of mittens. Not just any type of glove. They are mittens.
Which she used to smack a fly.
Yes, but they're fur on them. I wouldn't smack a fly with mittens on. Damn. So, Wakamatsu gets it all wrong. Reads the wrong manga. She should have read shonen manga. What the hell?
I like this couple.
This couple is hilarious. And Nozaki apparently puts them together, except he never wanted them to actually meet.
Yeah, it's like he like, once he finds out she's Lorelai, but if he already knows the voice of that singer belongs to the school club, why doesn't he just go to school club? Why does he think Nozaki got it from somewhere shady?
I feel like Nozaki is going to be the kind of person that's going to be like, I got this for you, and the only way I can get it is to pay with my body or something. Except in Makamatsu's mind, he's actually, like, in an alley somewhere. I don't know why.
With a Tony USB drive.
With a Tony USB drive. Yay for all the Tony USBs. Well, in the second half, we see more of Wakamatsu. and the crew trying to save Nozaki-kun's manga. Because Nozaki-kun is sick and cannot finish his manga series. Poor Nozaki-kun. I was just mentioning to May earlier, you have to first do a rough draft, and then after that, you have to like redraw all the manga, draw all the lines, erase them, and put on screen tone. Because screen tone is expensive, so that can't be a rough draft they're working on. That has to be the actual thing. That's why it's a deadline.
Why did they not call Mikorin?
Yeah, exactly. Because he seems to be the one that's like most knowledgeable, and he actually draws backgrounds and stuff.
I guess he only does the flowery screen tone.
Flowery backgrounds. But hey, we found out that Wakamatsu's good with screen tone.
Beginner's luck.
Beginner's luck. Nozaki-kun actually has the entire like entire school helping him with his manga now. He should be paying them. I wonder
they're
what...
They're all featured characters.
They're all featured characters, and in the series too. And I'm wondering like how much, like, why did he have to, like, redraw the manga? Is it just because they put in the screen tones wrong, or is it because they have, what's the word? They got all the script wrong.
Well, what I don't understand, what was it about the words that Nozaki didn't like that he was like, I'm going to ask for extension?
Yeah.
The parts he was reading looked normal. It's the parts they were doing, showing them doing, like, I'm hungry and stuff that seemed...
Yeah, exactly. Like, inappropriate I'm hungriness or screaming or something like that.
Because they were trying to imagine what girls think. And they're like, oh, Seo's a girl, we all know. And this is what she would think with those expressions. Sakura is a girl, right?
Yeah, but I don't know why Sakura didn't share her expert opinion as a girl.
I mean, I know why they wouldn't think of, what's it, the prince.
Yeah, Kashima.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're going to do. I really do hope he can get an extended deadline. Knowing a lot of, like, creators and a lot of manga stories, like, we don't exactly get a lot of extended deadlines. But good luck to Nozaki-kun.